Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Holtgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. And
everything happened this week, so that's a good thing.
Literally everything happened this week. Clearly, had we done the show on Monday as planned, it would be a much different show.
Yes.
Which, with a lot more yelling, where I think we'll have...
Well, I think it was a good day to kind of be able to get a day of reaction in, because we knew a lot of different things were going to happen yesterday. We knew that we were going to get reaction from the press on this part of the story that we knew was going to take over early on Sunday, simply because of the inability of the UFC to understand how terribly this was going to reflect on them and how much a journalist will stick with another journalist. I mean, think about it. You know, there was certainly a part of righteousness about this whole story with Ariel Helwani, which needed to be told. But you're going to add to that the fact that the media is being attacked by the UFC, essentially. It's not going to bode well for you in this case.
Well, and I was talking
is
on...
Is that what we want to start about?
Yeah, we'll start here. Yeah, why not? I mean, look, in an ideal world, I would start talking about the greatest MMA story in the last decade in Michael Bisping, because mm-hmm. that's really where we should have started. But I think it's important to kind of wrap this up because of sort of what happens last night and why this becomes important. Because, you know, I will read some of the comments that have been on the Facebook page about this story and people's opinions of Ariel Helwani for some context. But I would say, and I was saying last on Sunday on Twitter, that look, if you don't ban Casey and Esther, mm-hmm. I think this chills out a little bit. But the fact that you're just blatantly throwing an entire organization out for seemingly the acts of one human being and Esther Lynn being literally the nicest human being you'll ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's easily how you galvanize the MMA community. Now, by Sunday afternoon, when you start galvanizing, I don't know, pick one. When I went to bed last night, there were 658 articles about Ariel Helwani in outlets that don't start with the three letters MMA.
Well, and here's the thing that you need to remember, too, is... the reset here is that the UFC was upset that Ariel Helwani allegedly reported, or he did report.
No, he did report, yeah.
He did report, but he allegedly didn't do it in what the UFC considered a professional way in reporting that Conor McGregor was going to be fighting Nate Diaz in the rematch at 202, and then Brock Lesnar was going to be fighting at 200. Again, giant now, stories that we're not talking about yet because of the way the UFC handled it.
Well, and he did them 3 hours apart, and after he did the Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz, one of the PR people came up to try and get him to back down and say, hey, I don't think you're right on this story. And he said, in his own words, right, I'm not speaking for him, but said, no, I'm 100% right in this. I'm batting 1,000. I triple check this. And turns out he was right. And then 3 hours later, he confirms the Brock Lesnar thing. And that's what makes this spiral out of control.
Well, yeah, they got upset about it. And it's interesting, too. If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't watched the MMA Hour this week,
cool
I'll
boy.
Tell you, go just talk. No, turn us off right
yes,
now.
Go do
I don't
that.
Understand how you got all the way here without watching that yet. So do that now. And if you watch this, this is an interesting dynamic to watch. Because, I mean, Ariel Helwani, I mean, you and I met him in Chicago back when he was just getting credentialed for a Strikeforce events and Affliction
yes.
events.
Yep.
And, you know, a very nice guy, very cordial. I mean, but he's as big as a celebrity there is in the MMA media community. So it's kind of interesting to see out of all the people they would pick for this to happen to, for him. I mean, you've had situations in the past with Loretta Hunt. You've had situations in the past with Josh Gross.
Josh Gross.
And a lot of those can be contributed to, oh, the business dealings went bad. Because back in the day, you had to do everything. You had to be a journalist, and you had to sell UFC DVDs on your site, which is literally where the falling out came with Josh Gross, who I think at the time he was denied credentials by Zuffa to those Strikeforce events. I think he was with USA Today at the time. I'm not 100% sure, so you can correct me on that if you need to. So there's always been something else kind of going on every time the UFC has basically, quote-unquote, banned a reporter. And they've never really banned anybody. What they've done is they just haven't ever really dealt with them. And because they did it when it was a much smaller sport and much smaller company, nobody took notice. What happens here is you have a guy who has been back and forth with this company, and I'll tell you what, I have a lot of respect for Ariel Helwani. I think if you're not even an MMA nerd, you're a sports nerd, you want to kind of know how some of these things work, you take the time to watch this MMA hour. You listen to this. This is some of the best broadcasting I've seen as far as just simply being enthralling and something you can't turn off. That being said, as I listen to Ariel Helwani kind of lay out the past couple of years going back and forth with UFC, being an independent reporter, having a relationship with Dana White, and all of these things back and forth, and then things going very, very sour with the Fox deals and the fact that he felt like he had to compromise journalistic integrity because of the way the checks were being handed out, it sounded a lot like when you hear somebody in an abusive relationship, that they're justifying things back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening last night with my wife, and I looked at her, I go, this does not sound like a place I would want to work at all.
This doesn't sound like a place you want to be in your life right now. And he sounds like somebody who thought his career was over. And I don't think that was the case, but I think we've all been there. I know I've been there in spots, Eric. You've probably not been quite as far along as I have on occasion. And I'm not saying that what he said is wrong, because that's how you feel in these moments. He just happened to do a podcast 36 hours after this all went down. He just happened to do a podcast after he missed one of the guys he's been following for a decade win a world heavyweight title while security was literally walking him to his car. So I understand every bit of emotion there. I know we've got the crying Ariel memes, and they're a little funnier today considering the ban's been lifted.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's a lot of cynicism on the internet, but I tell you what, listening to this dynamic and listening to the back and forth, and we'll talk about the reinstatement momentarily, you kind of have to wonder what this is going to feel like for Ariel Helwani going back in a couple weeks to another event. I'm not sure if he's going to be in Ottawa this weekend. It's in Ottawa, correct?
It is, yes.
We can't even get to that yet.
Yeah, we likely won't.
Canada.
Actually.
Well, he'll probably be there. He's Canadian. He's from Montreal,
no,
so maybe he'll be there.
We probably won't even get to it.
I'm just saying there's an event in Canada. That's our rundown probably for this weekend.
You're caught up.
So you've got to wonder what it's going to be like when he walks back in there. He walks in those media rooms. It's going to be very interesting. And the dynamic here is certainly very strange. If I'm at MMA fighting and I'm his boss, I pull him into a room at some point and go, look, you work for us. And you have a job here. And you need to understand you have that job no matter what. Now go do what you do. I don't care if you get kicked out this week. I don't care if you get kicked out next week. If that's his job and that's what he does, they need to kind of let him know that, because as much as he thanked everybody there, he was very much in a position emotionally that seemed to lead me to believe that he felt alone. And a lot of times that can happen to very productive, very highly motivated people in their industries. They aren't appreciated because people just assume, oh, that guy, he goes and he gets it done. Man, he's got the hookup. Oh, he's got the inside track on the UFC. He's getting his job done. He's getting the stories done. He's getting everything done. Well, in some of those cases, those guys are busting their ass to do that. And, you know, it's as simple as a thank you sometimes. People quit bosses. They don't quit jobs. And sometimes if you're not appreciated, which I'm not sure. Again, I don't want to mentally dissect the dude in the first 36 hours after he thought his career was basically had a grenade thrown on it. But those MMA fighting guys, they seem like straight-up guys. Those are guys that have given him this career to this point where he is. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic as we move through the next couple days. I did very much appreciate the statement they made this morning. Let's go to the UFC statement first.
Yeah,
you want
to
do that?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so the UFC released a statement, and basically they lifted the ban on MMA fighting, which is the ban on Ariel Helwani, and then that was also Esther Lynn.
And then Casey.
And
the videographer. So yeah. If you've watched any of Ariel's videos, Casey is the one doing said videos.
And Casey and Esther are actually married, too.
Yes.
Obviously, they probably met during, I don't know about them.
Right.
This isn't the TMZ portion of the show.
Nor is that important, actually.
So the full UFC statement. Following a conversation with the editorial team at SB Nation, UFC will not prevent MMAfighting.com from receiving media credentials to cover live UFC events. We respect the role of the media playing in our sports and beyond, including MMA Fighting's ability to report news. However, in our opinion, we believe the recurring tactics used by its lead reporter extended beyond the purpose of journalism. We feel confident our position has now been adequately communicated to the SB Nation editorial team. UFC's goal as the world's leading mixed martial arts promotion is to cultivate interest in its world-class athletes and events and deliver for the fans. We will continue to introduce this sport and its athletes to new fans across the world. We will do so by working alongside media across all platforms. So, I guess if you were going to say, hey, the UFC is going to rescind this ban, Ken. How do you think the statement's going to sound? I would have probably been able to write that down in the same vein.
Sure.
They're going to say they're sorry, but then they're going to still be pissed because it's a couple dudes from Vegas that run a casino, and they're probably pissed.
Well, and let's not forget, when I went to bed last night, some context as to why this ban was listed. When I went to bed last night, there were somewhere in the vein of 658 stories, as I said, mm-hmm. if you search Google for Ariel Helwani having to do with this thing. There were somewhere in the vein of, like, I don't know, 311 stories about Brock Lesnar. So literally being mad about this thing getting blown, the day that Brock Lesnar shows up on SportsCenter to announce his opponent, he gets trounced by the oxygen that Ariel Helwani is sucking up because you banned him from telling everybody that Brock Lesnar was coming.
Well, not just that. Think about not just the numbers straight up, not the metrics. You had Brock Lesnar in the seat at SportsCenter, which Dana covets that seat, which is why I really honestly think, we'll get into this later, I really think Ariel should just go work for ESPN. I think if Ariel has that big stick, and at this point, if you're ESPN, why not hire that guy?
Sure.
They love hiring those
but
dudes.
But if you watched yesterday, he's not going to leave MMA fighting, certainly at this point. Right?
So, yeah, maybe if, I don't know. But the interesting thing is Dana loves the SportsCenter interviews. Loves, you know, they micromanage everything there. And maybe this is getting to the point where they can't do it. But Brock Lesnar's sitting there answering questions about Mark Hunt and about why he came back.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
And then Hannah Storm's like, what do you think about the UFC throwing a reporter out? And Brock Lesnar doesn't care who's in the room or as long as they're not signing his check. So he said, I don't know who that dude is. Now, Brock has talked to Ariel Helwani upwards of 10 times. There was a famous incident that he was pissed with about the Undertaker thing. So I don't know if Brock does or doesn't. A lot of people are saying Brock knows who he is. I can believe Brock will talk to a human being 150 times in his life. Never decide to put that person's name into their brain.
Likely might not know the name of his own children.
Right. I mean, are they signing a check? Probably not. So I believe that Brock doesn't know who that guy is. I also find it amazing that question gets asked during the announcement. A lot of credit to I believe it was Hannah Storm.
Yes.
I think she was the one doing that interview. I'm not 100% sure. A lot of credit to them for asking the question. And this is where I will say, okay, for a normal story, does that question get asked in that situation? No. But you've now basically attacked media in a certain way. And you haven't attacked it in the way that people get behind. Because everybody, every day, they hate the quote-unquote media. As members of the media, Eric, you and I can attest, there's no meeting, you know, once a month where we all decide what the propaganda is going to be.
Correct.
And what our storyline is to be. A lot of people believe there is. I can tell you there's no meeting. And if I knew, that's exactly what I'd say. But so people they line up against the media, but not in the way that this happened. This happened, and I was talking about this earlier in the week on ESPN 961. You see the volume and you see the echo chamber kind of reverberating and you see the swell of people supporting Ariel Helwani, not because he's a member of the media, but because he's got immediate relatability. I can't relate to Dana White fighting with Tito Ortiz over millions of dollars. I love Randy Couture. I can't relate when he and Dana White get into a fight again over millions of dollars. What I can relate to is the fact that I'm trying to do my job every day and do it the best that I can, and somebody keeps screwing with me. And that's what it sounds like happened with Dana White and Ariel Helwani. Ariel Helwani's got two kids at home. Ariel Helwani's got a family at home. Ariel Helwani is not making $1 million. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. It doesn't feel like it in the way that those fighters are.
No.
I don't think he is. Ariel Helwani is trying to do his job, tells us about a fight. We get excited about it, and it seems like some big bully comes from Vegas and says, F you, you're not going to get to do your job anymore. There's not a person on the planet that can't relate to that story. And I think that's why it reverberated in the way it did. I think that's why it sucked the air out of the room. And I think that's why the UFC issued the statement they did. I also enjoy the fact that MMA Fighting, they really didn't cover this, if you pay attention to kind of their news stories and their page. And I'm sure a lot of that was at Ariel's request.
They did essentially two. One was the announcement that they said this happened, and that was it. And then this is the thing that they wrote this morning.
Following a conversation with the editorial team at SB Nation, UFC will not prevent MMA Fighting from receiving media credentials to cover live UFC events. We respect the role the media plays in our sport and beyond, including MMA Fighting, blah, blah, blah. So that's all from the UFC, right? Let me find the statement here from MMA Fighting. And, oh, I'm sorry. Let's see. Are their statements very similar?
They're very similar, except for one line.
I might need to find their statement, so just give me a second here. Let's see. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to break it down. Essentially, they accepted...
I got it right here if you want me to.
They accepted the apology, and then there was a line in there where they basically said, we do not accept the fact that you think that our lead journalist was out of line.
They say, is MMAfighting.com appreciative of the fact that the UFC was willing to rethink its stance. However, we respectfully disagree with the UFC's claim that, quote, recurring tactics used by Ariel Helwani extended beyond the purpose of journalism, end quote.
And this is what the interesting thing is there. Their side of it, if you're going to talk about the UFC side, was that they were not asked for comment on the story. And I'm going to take out the fact that Ariel Helwani gave a couple of examples of what happened when he tried to do that.
Yeah, well,
and I think he feels very hurt. I think he did a lot of things where he thought they were his friend and they were never his friend.
Right.
I'm not saying they weren't friendly, but I don't think they were his friend in the way they thought it. You hear about the Ronda story and things like that. He did a lot of things that a lot of journalists don't ever have to do. And I think he did it in a way where he wanted to keep his integrity but still maintain those relationships, which I think is very hard to do. He talked about the fact that in times past that he'll go to the UFC for a comment on the story and the comment and the story show up somewhere else. He doesn't get the comment. He might get a no comment. And journalistic ethics don't ever dictate that you have to go to somebody with the story you're writing about, especially in a case like this. This wasn't some drug expose about steroid use in the UFC. This wasn't some story about, you know, Dana White in a room with hookers and blow. This was a story about a fight that's going to be announced in a couple hours. Isn't that cool? They were asked about this fight on Friday by another reporter. No comment. So there's no reason he has to go tell them, because what happens, it's going to end up on UFC.com. You don't sit on news as a journalist. There was somebody on our Facebook page.
I've got him right here if you want me to read him.
No, I don't need you to read him.
Okay.
It's one guy. It's not that hard to figure out. There's one guy who said that wasn't, quote unquote, his news to break. There isn't anything. That doesn't make sense. There's no such thing as his news or their news or our news. News is news, and if you're a reporter, you report it. And journalistically, there is nothing wrong with that. If you want simply a mouthpiece for the UFC, then go to their page. Go to their PR team. That's what you can read that all day. They want the media to become that, but that is not the role of the media. You want the media to be in your role. And if you're a fan of MMA, there's no better person covering this sport at this time from the fan's perspective, not a former fighter, not just an analyst, somebody from the fans' perspective. I will tell you, there's nobody better right now than Ariel Helwani, who's going to ask those questions you want to hear, who's going to talk to Nate Diaz about the situation with UFC when nobody wants to ask him about it because they don't want to lose their status with UFC. That's going to go ahead and let Rory McDonald talk about free agency on his podcast. There's nobody better to do that than him. There's no such thing as his news or our news. I know you've been a credentialed. I've been a credentialed by the NFL, MLB, Big Ten, Strikeforce. I don't remember who owned them at that point.
Right.
And even, yes, Zuffa. Zuffa has credentialed me. There is no consideration there to hold a story simply because I've been given a pass to your event. They have the right to not give me a pass, but them giving me that pass doesn't mean I have to sit on anything I learn, because that's not how this works. There's a couple exceptions. Anything that's off the record, we've been told off the record things quite a few times. You don't say that. He didn't do that. This was independently sourced information. The other thing that would be most common to this situation would be if they hand all the reporters a press release at the beginning of the event and they give you a rundown. Hey, this is embargoed until after the event. They didn't do that. This wasn't the UFC telling all the reporters there, wait till you see the Brock promo tonight, and then, you know, Ariel thumbing out a tweet. This was him reporting a story with independent sources, not from the UFC, and not with any knowledge garnered from the UFC.
And the one thing I would say to the person that was talking about it was not his news to break. He went on to say that they spent millions and somebody goes and ruins it. Look, he didn't ruin anything. And here's what it's not like he stopped the fight from happening. It's not like you're not going to buy the pay-per-view. It's not as if millions upon millions of people are not going to buy UFC 200. How it gets ruined is just what we were talking about, is that we spent all Monday not talking about Brock, not talking about Mark Hunt, not talking about Michael Bisping, not talking about Dan Henderson, not talking about any of that stuff. We spent the whole day talking to and about Ariel Helwani.
And that is not what the UFC wanted there.
No.
Nobody
which is
would've...
why the ban is lifted.
And you and I were paying attention to this the night of the event, and you were sending things out through our Facebook page and Twitter like, oh, Ariel Helwani's reporting this. And we know he's pretty legit, but man, he's really into the wrestling. Maybe this isn't real. It was still, we knew it, and it still surprised the hell out of me when that promo showed up. Were you not surprised when that promo showed up?
You were, I mean, you're... To his point, like, he's batting 1,000. But even batting 1,000, when you hear this, you've heard the... And I think somebody put it on our page when we were talking about it. You've heard Brock Lesnar's coming back 100,000 times, and he doesn't come back. Right?
Were you surprised at the promo?
1,000%,
yes.
Because he's still under WWE contract.
And you read but the then, report, and you shared the report, and you wrote comments on the report.
You know,
and you still were 1,000% surprised when that promo shows up.
Totally surprised. And then, of course, it makes sense last night when Paige VanZant is showing up at SummerSlam. Right mm-hmm. now, you're beginning to see, oh, okay, I see how the business of this works. I see how they were excited about it. I also see two other things that are not related to Ariel Helwani, but are also important lessons when you're dealing with the UFC. The UFC said, all right, Conor McGregor, you don't want to show up for the press thing. You don't want to do this thing. You don't want to do that thing. It's all good, man. We're going to go get Brock Lesnar.
Right.
Okay? We're good with that. Oh, okay, Ronda. You don't want to talk to anybody for months and months on end and then get your knee injured doing God knows what? It's all good. We're going to send Paige VanZant over to SummerSlam. You know that thing that you wanted to do with The Rock? She's going to do it instead.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to fill the void without you, right? This is an organization that's going to press on regardless. And I think that's the lesson that they need to learn them or needed to learn themselves last night. It doesn't matter if Ariel reports this. It doesn't matter. The truck still goes. UFC 200 still happens. Brock Lesnar is still in an octagon getting beat to death by Mark Hunt. That all of those things are still going to happen.
You think that's going to happen?
With 100% certainty.
Okay, so let's shut the door on this if we can, because we do have other things to get to, including a very sad story.
I want to do that next because I feel that there's a correlation between these two.
So what we're landing at right now is going to be a very interesting situation because there's a spotlight now on the UFC and the way they deal with media. They've been able to truck media for the past 10 years as the sport has grown. The media yesterday decided you're not going to get to truck us for nothing. And this essentially is nothing. As Ariel said, he's not going to win a Pulitzer Prize. Or Pulitzer for breaking a surprise announcement on a pay-per-view.
Sure.
That's not what's going to happen. So the UFC had to relent in the best way that they could, where they said, no, we're still mad at you, but okay, come on in. I guess it's cool. So that's where we are right now. Be interesting to see. I hope Ariel's in a better place. And again, I'm not judging too much from yesterday. Some of us have been in that spot before. It's a tough thing to do. It's a tough thing to go through. And I'll be honest, the times I've had in my career where somebody tells you, hey, you got to stop doing this, I haven't had to broadcast the next day because that's specifically my job. So when they tell me I can't do it,
right.
I just had to stop doing it for a while.
Yeah, right, so. Yes.
Again, I've been in those spots before, and I've been in a very similar place. So let's see what Ariel looks like this week. I imagine things are turning around for him.
Good thing is it's next weekend. So you get a week off. So
we're still not really going to talk about it.
No, we're not.
Because insane things keep happening. Also today, I found out early this morning. I know this was developing last night.
Yeah, it happened right around 1:30 in the morning. I
believe. Oh, it was that late? I thought we knew a little bit earlier on.
Maybe a little bit earlier.
There was some internet supposition around 11 last night.
But I was able to like triple confirm at like 1:30 and make sure that it was.
Yeah, and I saw you did that because that's where I first saw it. Kevin Ferguson, better known as Kimbo Slice, passing away at the age of 42. Still not a lot of details on what might have happened with Kimbo. He was supposed to fight James Thompson. That was a rematch from one of those Strikeforce Elite XC. Yeah, I don't remember which
July
ones.
12th, I believe.
July 12th. So you would have to believe he's ostensibly training at this point. He was rushed to a hospital in Florida.
The local paper is reporting heart failure of some sort.
I mean, you'd have to think at this point, if somebody's going to die at the age of 42 and it's natural causes, so to speak, it would have to be something with a heart attack. I mean, that would be the thing I would think of there. And it's just, it's kind of relatable to what was going on with Michael Bisping in a certain regard, where the guy's been around and really earned the respect. If you remember back in the mid-2000s, maybe even earlier, he was one of those dudes on the internet. He was an internet tough guy. Fought in backyards. He became a legend on YouTube. YouTube and some of the older video sites, even the old MMA.tv sites.
Yes. Yep.
They would get uploaded there. And everybody wondered, what would he do if he fought a UFC fighter? And most MMA fans, you and I included, said he's going to get smashed. He's going to get smashed if he fights in the UFC. And, you know, he didn't end up in the UFC initially. He ended up in Elite XC and Strikeforce and getting his chances there. And he was obviously very well protected there because he was the meal ticket for those promotions. But then the man, after those promotions went under, basically decided, okay, you know what? I'm going to suck it up, and I'm going to go in the house. And he went from being a superstar in what was Elite XC at the time to basically going into the house for the Ultimate Fighter. And I don't know about you, but that's where I really started looking at this thing and going, you know, I've got some respect for this guy. He's going to go in the house. He's probably got other offers at this point, and he wants to make this a real thing. So he decided to go in the house, fight on UFC Ultimate Fighter, and then basically take a beating from Big Roy Country Nelson.
Yes.
Yep. Big Country Roy Nelson. And that was the one fight, too, where you gain a lot of respect for Kimbo, and you wonder what the hell Roy Nelson's doing. Because Kimbo didn't have a scratch on him. He wasn't hurt at all. He just didn't know what he was doing. And I don't blame at all Roy Nelson for exploiting that. But you kind of look at Kimbo and go, well, you know, he had the balls to go in the house. He had the balls to take these fights and go in there and do this and humble himself. And then he went on the Ultimate Fighter finale, and he fought Houston Alexander. And we all, no way.
0%.
Oh, yeah, Houston Alexander, he's a UFC veteran. He's had some big wins. There's no way. He goes in, and he beats Houston Alexander. And that was amazing. He lost to Matt Mitrione, a legit fight, which even became more legitimate later. Obviously, his most recent fight was Dada 5000. That was kind of a strange no contest in Bellator 149. And of course, I forgot about the Ken Shamrock fight.
Ken Shamrock before that.
So, I mean, yeah, he's a guy that over the past couple of years you kind of watch and you end up rooting for. And then this happens, and it's just a terrible thing. And, you know, we'll find out more about what happens in the next couple of days. The thing I think I really want to look at here is what Bellator is doing.
Well, so this is why I wanted to tie these two things together. So while you're listening to this, or you're listening to Ariel Helwani, or you've been looking at Twitter or reading on Facebook or whatever you've been doing, and you've been saying, he ruined Christmas, he ruined their announcement, it's not his news to break, hate everything that Ariel does, not a fan of the sport, whatever you want to say, when you get to stories like this, this is where this becomes important, because in tandem, and I'm not connecting these yet, in tandem, there is a story about Bellator accepting falsified or fraudulent doctors' statements,
yes,
you know, examinations of said fighters. So if at some point in this examination, and all of these emails began to come out when a former employee sued Bellator, and in discovery, these emails came out, and then you're starting to see this thing be flushed out. So if you know that there's something wrong with these fighters and you let them fight, you are obviously responsible for what happens to them in and out of the cage, because somebody has to, you know, the thing that keeps this sport from being backyard boxing, backyard wrestling, backyard mm-hmm. MMA, is that somebody stands in the way and has the good thought to make sure that they are protecting the fighters. So when you look at that Dada 5000 fight with Kimbo, both of them looked really off. It was a pretty terrible fight. Dada 5000 actually died afterwards and was brought back and was in a coma, right? Like,
yeah, he had everything. I've got the list. Cardiac arrest, severe dehydration, fatigue, renal failure during and after the contest. These are all things that you would think medicals would have, something to say about before
yes.
and after a fight.
If you actually did them.
Right. And again, we don't know what's going on there. So what you've got is, in this case, is a fighter who literally could have been pronounced dead after that fight. If you remember the fight, he didn't fall down because Kimbo hit him.
He just fell down.
He just fell down. And so you've got that fighter, and then you've got a fighter who's training for a fight right now that dies. And we don't know what happened, if he had a heart attack. And again, I'm not saying you need to have a doctor there in somebody's camp every week. That's not really something I think promotion should be required to do. But I do think at this point, we ask the media to ask those questions.
Yes.
We ask the people close to the situation to go, what do you have in place? I want somebody to talk to Scott Coker, and I have a lot of respect for Scott Coker. I want somebody to talk to Scott Coker and ask him, what do you do as far as your medicals. What can you and can't you do legally? Do you do the most you can do? Are you doing all you can do for these fighters? Because I know it's Bellator, but you've got Viacom pockets. And I want the same questions asked of the UFC. This didn't happen in the UFC, but somebody needs to go, hey, medical-wise, what are you doing for these fighters? Do you do all you can do? And I've given UFC credit in the past, and I still give them credit. They've done a lot in the past couple of years, especially in making sure that their fighters are taken care of and that they're doing what they can do with the fighters. Is that happening in Bellator? Because Bellator on TV, when you see their events and you see what's going on, there's clearly a lot of money there, but it also looks like a bit of a free-for-all. Like, hey, we're all just kind of doing this. Whee!
Right.
It's going to be on TV tomorrow. And if that same attitude is there as far as the medical records and suspensions and where we are with certain doctors, we need those questions asked, and that does loop exactly into what we were talking about. If the UFC's pissed about a Brock Lesnar promo being reported on, which is essentially what they were pissed about, how much would they want to hide if there were a giant medical issue or fraud doctors in their midst?
Well, and this is what I was saying on Sunday, right? Is when you look at the NFL, do you think the NFL wants to deal with all this discussion about concussions and CTE and fighters shooting themselves in the chest so that you can examine their brain and find out how much damage damage they took to their brain over the course of their career? Do you think that they want that out? No, but they can't control it because they don't have the ability to control what is, in sports, the fourth branch of government, right? The journalists who are there to break these stories and tell you what's happening. When you have baseball players who are on steroids, who were breaking records, and they were really breaking them artificially in means that were not legal at the time. You can discuss whether or not, I mean, you are now have the opportunity to discuss at bars all across America whether or not steroids should be in baseball. Does it make it more interesting? You wouldn't know those things if there weren't journalists knocking down the doors to figure these stories out, because owners and players and all, they don't want these stories to be out. That's why they don't tell them themselves on their Facebook pages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's exactly the media's role. And again, it goes back to news. Nobody owns news. Nobody owns news. If this is news and it's been corroborated and it's true, you go with it in the media. And if these things end up being true about Strikeforce and the allegations that we're seeing in these lawsuits.
Bellator,
excuse me.
Strikeforce doesn't exist anymore.
Man.
Neither does Pride if you're going to go there. So,
are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
I see it on FS1 every once in a while.
I'm sure you do.
Okay. So, again, the media is going to be the one to answer these ask these questions, and that's why. And that's why these things are important. That's why you see media circle the wagons. And this wouldn't have happened. This would have happened pretty much with any journalist in a similar situation in a similar field. You were going to see those questions asked, and you were going to see people go, why are you doing this? If it were the NFL, if it were the NBA, if it were any sporting organization, all the same organizations would have asked. If this were on the political side, you would see the Washington Post, you would see the New York Times.
The Guardian, Forbes,
exactly,
all of them.
And asking the same questions. Why were you banned from the Trump rally? Or why were you banned from a Barack Obama press conference? This line of questions is always going to be asked. And at this point, I'm glad it's always going to be asked if something like this happens.
All right. Well, let's shift into a little bit more positive topics, because there was and I said this leading up to the event when we were talking to Michael Bisping last week, that I thought UFC 199, I didn't know about the Brock announcement. So there you go. But leading into UFC 199, I thought that UFC 199 was better than UFC 200. And I will still tell you at this point that I'm optimistic that it's still going to hold a candle to UFC 200 when it's all said and done, because I thought this event was fantastic. And the rumors, and they are at this point rumors, the rumors of Aldo perhaps being on again, off again, injured this week, makes that Max Holloway fight all the more important from UFC 199.
Wait. Okay, I'm with you. I'm not saying what you didn't say was true, but out of all the things you just, all the platitudes you just laid out there, we were going to talk about Max Holloway first.
Well, no, the point being that you know you've got this rare occasion. I picked him specifically because you have this rare occasion where all five fights in the main event had huge implications. And if there's something wrong with the,
no, I'm with you there.
You know, huge implications. You've got Faber now looking at his career and going, okay, I got absolutely outclassed by Dominic Cruz. And so what am I going to do now? I mean, they're going to open, they're opening an arena in Sacramento, so I sort of want to be a part of that. But what do I do there? Because I cannot do these things. And then you've got the Rockhold story. Knee injury. Heads into this fight. 2 weeks notice off of Vin Diesel movie, Michael Bisping becomes the
first... Is that what he was doing?
Yes. Becomes the first English champion in the organization in what is... without a doubt, my favorite, may not be yours, my favorite MMA story in the last 8 years, hands down.
Oh, I think the story's amazing if you really think about it, because, look, I've never been a Bisping fan. I'm always one to kind of roll up to the fight pass on the TV and pop in a UFC 100, and
yes.
I don't even need to get to the Brock Lesnar part if right. and be done watching. I always love watching Dan Henderson drop that punch and just waylay Michael Bisping, which, again, at that point, I think was going to be for a title shot. Michael Bisping, the ultimate bridesmaid, never a bride in these instances where he was fighting for those title shots. And every time it looked like, well, yeah, he's about to get cut. I mean, what do you do with him after this? What do you do with him after this? He would always come back and he'd put a couple fights together and he'd prove that he should be right there with everybody. And you've got to really think. There's a couple of factors that I thought were interesting. I thought it's a great story. I mean, guy's been there a decade, finally wins a championship. We find out that Luke Rockhold is the douchebag that Chris Weidman has been telling us about. Because, I mean, everybody was holding up. Oh, yeah. Look at the All-American poster boy. He was a straight-up baby in that post-fight presser. Baby. He was. It might be one of the most embarrassing, if you want to look at it from that perspective, performances in a post. Tito Ortiz looked at that and goes, man, you got to calm down after a loss.
And to frame that, right, I think if Luke keeps it above board and isn't a complete idiot, when Michael Bisping calls him.
Yes, he used a gay slur and immediately apologized.
Yeah, but if he just did that and Luke was cool, that would have been a much bigger story.
Yeah.
But because Luke,
no, but Luke was
a giant baby the whole time.
He was
time.
A giant ass for the better part of 20 minutes. Not only was he a giant ass, but he was caught being a giant ass because, as many people know, if you watch these post-fight pressers, the champs are usually really late coming in. They do all the press. They do UFC Tonight.
Yes.
They talk to everybody.
Yep.
So they usually try to start the pressers before that so people aren't there all night. So right in the middle of Luke Rockhold being an ass, you see Bisping come in. And Bisping's kind of caught by surprise. He's hoping for the, hey, good fight, everybody, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, Luke Rockhold starts calling him names. So it goes back and forth. Dave Scholler at one point said, I feel like I'm back in the pre-fight pressers because these guys are just going at it. And then Dominic Cruz and Faber start going at it for God knows what reason. That's the funniest thing. Both the losers in these fights have no arguments. By the way,
no,
I posted this on Twitter just before this, all these rumblings. And this again is funny because the Ariel Helwani thing just sucked the air out of everything. I posted on Twitter Sunday morning thinking about last night's fight. Just rewatched it. There's nothing that I saw in last night's fight that tells me that Luke Rockhold deserves a rematch at this point, because a lot of people are by default going, well, in the rematch, Hill, wait a minute. You're telling me over and over again that a guy like
Jacare,
like there's
Weidman.
Been a lot of fights. Weidman, the Conor McGregor fight.
Diaz.
No.
Jose Aldo.
I don't know why I can remember that. Wait, you're telling me that guy doesn't deserve a rematch, but you want to give one to Luke Rockhold, who got beat up more. I mean, that was a punch that put down Jose Aldo.
Right. 13 seconds.
Right. You know, if you watch this fight,
it's 4 minutes-ish.
Yeah, 4 minutes-ish, and for the last 90 seconds of it, he was getting his ass kicked. So I didn't see anything in there that makes me want to necessarily see a rematch yet. Maybe you especially after he acted the way he did at the presser. The other interesting dynamic I saw kind of touched on, and again, these things didn't get fleshed out nearly as much as we should have probably fleshed them out over the past day and a half or two. There's one dynamic that a lot of people are starting to point at now, and that's the fact through this 10-year run, some of the losses and some of the tough losses that Michael Bisping took on many occasions that would knock him out of contention for that title were to Dan Henderson, were to Wanderlei Silva, were to Chael Sonnen, were to Vitor Belfort.
TRT Vitor Belfort, though.
Though all of those dudes at some point had TRT.
Yes.
They all at some point were either busted or they had the exemption. It wasn't just TRT Vitor Belfort.
But he's been saying that for 5 or 6 years.
So the guys he lost to, at some point, all did drugs in their career. I mean, I don't care if they were legal or not, and the UFC said, okay, it's cool, because you're kind of old, Dan Henderson. You can take some drugs. Okay, it's cool. Chael Sonnen, we love you. You make a lot of money. You didn't pass that test, but you're coming back.
It's okay.
I love Chael. I don't apologize for that. But if you look at some of the losses he's taken, I mean, the guy's been beaten by steroids a lot. A lot. So that's one aspect of the story. The other one that I thought was interesting, which not a lot of people have really talked about yet, is the fact that the weigh-ins have changed as far as the California rules. Like maybe somebody tweeted out Sunday, maybe Michael Bisping's an unstoppable monster when he can weigh in at 10 and rehydrate for an extra 8 hours each day.
Right.
Because I think, you know, that may have played a big part. Almost every fighter, I think I read
70% was at 10 a.m. Yeah,
they did the early weigh-in and then they weighed in throughout. Nobody had an official weigh-in, I don't think, at the actual official weigh-in. I don't think anybody had that late.
I don't think so, no.
Because that I think almost every fighter made weight at 10 and then they had until 2 to keep weighing in. Like they basically had that window of the day. So if they had to cut, they could still cut before 2. This could be a really interesting dynamic, especially if the UFC decides that, hey, that's how we want to do our weigh-ins. Okay, Nevada, let's do this. Okay, New York, let's do this.
The only thing I would say, and I'll say it again because I said it on Saturday or Friday night when I did the show, is that Talk MMA, you can follow him on Twitter. He's a great insider, lots of great information. But he was pointing out that, like, if you're going to do that, which I think you should, because I love personally the idea that at 10 a.m. they are done with everything. They're done with media. They're done with talking with anybody. They've got to
choose. Well, they're not done with media. They still have to come back in the afternoon for the presser, which is essentially the weigh-in.
But they don't have to do, like, but no, this is.
They don't have to answer any questions or
anything.
You're
missing my point, right? If you're going to do it at 10 a.m., put that on TV.
Yeah, but I don't think they can't the way that this one was set up. This is a 4-hour window. You don't put 4-hour windows on TV.
I understand. But if you
know you really like 50 Snapchats in a row.
Yes.
So
I
you
do.
Might think the 4-hour weigh-ins on TV are just
that.
The best thing ever.
You know, but I think if you're gonna move it up to 10 AM, move everybody up to 10 AM and do that thing at 10 and then have them be done with it for the day.
Again, and that goes back to the commissions. So you would have to figure that out.
Well, screw them.
Okay,
this is what you
screw the
do.
Commissions. All right.
But I did. I mean, I did think it was game changing, and I hope they continue to do it.
And you know, and that might have been why we saw so many exciting fights that night. How we saw so many fights that where the guys look like they were fresher. You know, Michael Bisping, we don't know how fresh he had to be. He only took a round, but he certainly said this was the easiest camp because he didn't really have a camp, and this was the easiest training because he didn't really have to train, and this was everything was the easiest about this for him. And he was able to win the title. So it's very interesting to kind of see where they go from here. Again, I know we're short on time simply because of the way everything's worked out this week. I don't want to get too deep into this. What is the first fight you would make right now?
With Bisping?
Yes.
Jacare.
I think I'm going with you, too. The only other fight, which is a little pie
just
in the sky.
Stop it.
Let's do it again.
Just stop
let's
it.
Let's do it again. Bisping Hendo 2. You made it that night. That fight with Dan Henderson being on the same card. Tell me, what's the word for it? You're the smart guy at this point of the day.
Serendipity?
Serendipity. That's I knew you'd know it. That's serendipity. That he was on the card and he dropped the elbow version of the H-bomb on Hector Lombard.
Here's my problem, though, with the Hector Lombard fight, is if you go back and watch the first round, Hector Lombard is moving around and having his way with Dan Henderson. Mm-hmm. Having his way with Dan Henderson.
You forget, I don't care how competitive the fight is. I just want to see Bisping Hendo 2 on the marquee.
But I just have a giant glaring question about that fight. It's like, so Lombard goes back to his corner and they go, hey, all that movement was awesome. You were winning the first round. What we want you to do right now is stand in front of him and then just keep grabbing his foot.
See, I don't
just stand there and just keep grabbing his foot.
He didn't keep grabbing it. He
just
caught a kick.
The key to victory is just grab his foot.
He caught a kick. Caught a little bit of Luke Rockhold's prima donna. I'm much better than you situation. And I don't know why he was holding on to that leg. That was very weird.
Just that's the key to victory.
Maybe
grab his foot.
Maybe because he was mopping the cage with Dan. He thought he was going to do something with that leg. And Dan decided no. Are you surprised that he landed two elbows on the ground? Because even I thought the referee was stunned by the fact that he knocked him down after that.
Lombard was down for a long time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I feel like the referee was even stunned. Like, wait, what did you do? What'd that guy do? He was just getting his ass kicked for a round.
Right.
What did you just say? Oh, yeah, like a bad baby. Go stop this. He just smooshed his face twice. And I tell you, there's nobody in the business better at finishing a fight than Dan Henderson and just making it brutal. Like, he doesn't miss the punches when he knocks you out. He doesn't miss the elbows. The referee has to get there or you're going to get hit a couple more times.
And, as you think back, because I know that they were talking about this a little bit on Saturday night, when you think back to when we were in Chicago for the Fedor fight, like, he's on Fedor's back. He's not missing. Shooting underneath his armpit. I mean, he's cracking you in the head every punch.
And being there live, we had no idea what was going on because that was just how fast and how quick Dan Henderson was. Because you and I both thought with the initial knockdown in that fight, and now we got enough to do to break down fights from like 6 years ago.
Right.
But you and I both thought, oh, that's it for Dan Henderson. They both thought, what happened? Oh, we watched the replay and he's just cracking Fedor. So there's nobody better at finishing a fight. You can sell a whole pay-per-view on these guys. Because let's not forget, after UFC 200, other than Conor and Nate, we used everybody up. So we got to still put some more pay-per-views together.
Do you
and
think,
I tell you, Bisping Hendo too, you can do it.
Okay, I know you're excited about that fight, but do you really need to see Dan Henderson in the cage again?
I think for that fight, I'd love to. Otherwise, if he wants to retire, I get it. But if you want to call Dan up and go, hey, man, you want a title shot? Do you think Dan Henderson's turned down that call? Out of all the calls he's never turned down, he turns down?
Yeah, he's not going to turn that one down.
Yeah, he's not turning that one down. What should we jump to here? Oh, Brock. This is how ridiculous this weekend has been.
We'll finish with Brock.
Brock is back.
Yes, Brock is back. He will be taking on Mark Hunt. I'm guessing by your body language 40 minutes ago that you don't hold the same belief I do that it's going to
be. You said murder.
Straight murder.
You said Mark Hunt's going to straight murder Brock Lesnar. Here's a couple things. I want to give Brock Lesnar and the UFC credit, and I'm sure it's more Brock Lesnar at the end of the day because I'm pretty sure the UFC would have brought James Thompson in from the UK.
Right, yes.
They would have brought Shane Carwin in as was postulated earlier in the day.
Shane was trying.
I can put that tinfoil hat on later in case you think Mark Hunt might not make it to the fight, but hey, we still got to do it.
When was the first, for the record though, if we're, you know, since we're speaking a lot about journalism, when was the last time that Mark Hunt didn't make it to a fight?
I'm just saying, if you really think that UFC is trying to protect this guy in Brock Lesnar, booking this fight right now as this sounds amazing and no questions are asked. Because the thing I haven't heard, which you expected to hear after this announcement and not knowing who he was going to fight, I was waiting for all the arguments about, oh, this guy can't do this, this guy's over the hill, this guy's the other thing. Maybe you can make a slight argument that Mark Hunt is old, but he's only 3 years older than Brock, I believe.
Well, and remember, guys, that...
But you can't make any of those arguments about Mark Hunt. Mark Hunt is number 8 in the world.
No.
His past 10 fights, he's only lost to current or former UFC world champions, Stipe, JDS, and Fabricio Werdum. Those are the only losses for him in his past 10 fights, Mark Hunt.
1,000%. And then there's a very important reason that it had to be Mark Hunt. Because if you're going to bring Brock Lesnar in for a one and done, you've got to steal a page from Pride, and it has to be a freak show fight, so you got to pick big guys. And right now in the heavyweight division, there are not a lot of big guys. They average around 228 to 230, and Mark Hunt is a big, so you got two giant dudes that just make the promo what you want it to be, right? You need monster versus monster.
Well, you got the highlight reel you set up, too. You put a Mark Hunt highlight reel up, and not that you can't do it with any other heavyweight, but you can make a highlight reel out of Mark Hunt and put that up against a Brock's highlight reel.
I mean,
straight-up murder is not going to happen. I could see Brock winning this fight if he's on his game.
You're insane.
I'm not insane.
What are we betting? I'm betting anything.
Do
you
know
bet right now?
That there's only...
Round one. Brock
is one of only five heavyweights in UFC history to have defended the belt twice, and nobody's done it more than that. So for anybody who laughs at his quote-unquote championship reign, nobody's done it better. Nobody's lasted longer.
That's not what I'm saying.
But what I'm saying is he did that when he was having his ass kicked by diverticulitis left and right. And I get it. It's his wrestling manager. But if that guy's to be believed who's talked in interviews with sporting magazines and other places like that, you know what he said, Brock was at best 50% most of his time in the UFC. Again, Brock's aged. Brock has been doing some wrestling, not enough to really take the toll that a normal wrestling schedule would take. I mean, if Brock is in the shape that he can be in and get into this fight, and he just, he could take down Mark Hunt. Mark Hunt's got some nice MMA wrestling. Let's remember how good Brock Lesnar's wrestling was initially in the UFC, and of course, before that, going back to his NCAA days. I think Brock's a guy. He's still got those lunchbox fists.
So you think he's
Randy
winning
Couture
this
talks
fight?
About. I think he's got a great shot. He's the favorite right now.
He was the favorite. Not anymore.
Did the money move?
Yes.
And again, I wasn't going to say that he's the favorite because people think he's going to win. You just knew a lot of money was going to come
in. Yeah, no, it moved last night.
On Brock initially. And then, you know, a lot of the smart guys like you started putting their money on Mark Hunt, I'm sure.
I put my house on it, actually.
You put your house on
it? No, I did not. Come on now.
Which, the old house that you already sold
to
somebody?
The one I sold, I already put
that. Right,
I hope that guy...
really hope Mark Hunt wins, buddy.
Because that's going to
suck
for you.
You seem like a nice family.
You seem like a great guy who's going to be out of a house that I don't own.
We'll obviously talk about this more as we get closer. For anybody who says that Mark Hunt's going to straight up murder him, I don't think they're paying attention to the ability that's there.
That's hurtful. You're just hurtful right now.
I'm just saying you're not paying attention to the ability that's there.
I cannot wait for July because
I want to call Sean Desai you guys can have a fun
Bash
Brock session.
Did
that surprise you when I told you that he has defended the belt as many times as any other heavyweight
in UFC
because
history? I knew that he was one of, if not the only guy to do it, because it just, that division, it's not possible. And I also know, again, to be fair to him, and then we'll wrap up here, right? Like, I also know that he did some remarkable things suffering from a terribly debilitating disease that left a friend of ours who had the same thing in bed for 6 months.
Yeah.
Right? Not fighting other human beings, in bed for 6 months.
And again, I don't want to get too much into the business of breaking down fights from the past couple years, but I watched the Alistair Brock fight another time. And the one takeaway, and if anybody's got Fight Pass still, you haven't canceled yet because there was a big boycott call for that. Go grab the fight. Go look at the fight. Go watch how it went down. Importantly, watch what Brock looks like afterwards. Brock is fine. I have to wonder how much mentally he didn't like getting hit, essentially, where, you know, Alistair Overeem, I give him 100% credit. You know, you're in there to fight. You go after your opponent. And he was zeroing in, essentially, right on the surgery.
Yep.
And over again, he hit Brock. And Brock was wincing and going down, and he finally went down with kind of a body shot, liver kick, maybe. But the thing I notice is usually when guys go down from body hits, it's because they've been worn down. They've been hit really hard. You can go out from a body hit, no doubt, especially a guy with the legs, tree trunks that Alistair Overeem walks around with.
Yep.
But the thing I have to wonder when I look at that is how much of that was Alistair just wailing on that spot and hurting it, and how much of it was Brock like, oh, my God, he keeps hitting me there. He's hitting me there again. He's hitting me there again. He's hitting me there again over and over and over. At a certain point, I wonder, you know, I don't question Brock Lesnar's mental game at any point, but you do have to wonder, even for anyone, what that would feel like over and over again, where essentially you're getting hit where you just had your surgery. You know, I've had knee surgery before. You're hyper aware of the knee for the rest of your life.
Yep.
Like, did I just twist that? What's going on? I didn't twist it, did I? Oh, God, that can be bad. And for Brock, essentially, you got somebody with a ball bat the size of a tree trunk hitting the spot you just had surgery in. What was he out? 8 months prior to that, maybe?
Yes, 7 or 8. Yeah.
Literally on the operating table, literally having part of his intestines taken out, and he's now in the cage, and somebody's just hitting him over and over again there. You have to wonder if after this length of time, he feels much more comfortable with that. He's got his energy back, quote-unquote. This Brock Lesnar could be scary. I'm just a little bummed out that he didn't try to do this last year. I feel like we were cheated a little bit, just like Brock feels like he was cheated a little bit. I feel like we were cheated a little bit. At that opportunity where he could do it, I'm a little bummed that he didn't do it, because I think the time in the WWE, it wasn't conditioning for fighting, but it let him get really comfortable with his body and where it is now. I don't think you could have necessarily ever jumped right back into fighting, but he was able to do that and kind of realize, oh, I've got my cardio. Oh, I've got this. Oh, I've had somebody throw steps at me.
You're referring to a year ago when he had the chance to go one way or the other.
Right. A year ago when he had not when he went back initially.
No. Last year he was re-signing
again,
one way or the
other. I would have loved to have seen them buy 12 more months for the dude. I would have loved to have seen that. And we'll get a little taste of it. Here's the question, though. If you see Brock Lesnar beat the number 8 guy in the world, is he done with UFC?
Well, what's interesting, we're going a little long this week, and I don't.
And we didn't even talk that much about the UFC. Way to go, Dana.
I don't apologize, but we did go a little long, so I'm going to keep this quick. What I find interesting is this new partnership between the two entities. Is he done? I don't know. If they can make money together, why can't it work in the same way Pride did?
Oh, and the way that Brock described it was perfect on SportsCenter. These are two billionaires doing big business, and I'm big business.
Of course he is. But, like, think of how much easier this might have been for a guy like CM Punk if it was all done congruently, as opposed to, I hate you, I'm leaving you. Oh, I've been injured for 3.5 years.
Because I went through a ringer for 15 years.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that a lot of people don't realize about Brock in WWE now, especially, and even before. He was never put through the ringer like a lot of these guys are. He's not a guy that's had to take these WWE injuries.
He had the Rock schedule, like the famous Rock schedule, almost from the jump.
Yeah, not quite from the jump, but very quickly after. I mean, they got him his own planes. I mean, they were trying to do everything for the dude because they realized what a superstar he is. And these are two billionaires doing business, and that's Vince McMahon and the Fertittas by proxy of Dana White. And he's big business. So is it the last time? I don't know. It really depends on how he looks.
Well, and let's not forget, again, and then we'll wrap up, the Paige Van Zandt thing, super interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this girl is a superstar.
And she just spent 4 months on ABC.
Came in second, right? She's going to go right to SummerSlam.
I'm not really sure the ranking.
Well, no, I mean, she was in the final, but I mean, she was
gets
in,
her
the,
there every week.
In the last episode.
Yeah.
Came in second, right? And America loved her. She's now going to go on WWE's second biggest event of the year in SummerSlam, go right back to fighting. She can show up at WrestleMania. I mean, like, if this is really what they're doing, if you're in combat sports, I find this stuff sort of exciting because it's the only way in my mind that you can scale this business to a degree that it needs to be scaled in a different direction.
I think so.
Like, you're not going to get any bigger firing and hiring Ariel Helwani 6 times a year. Right?
No,
like,
no. I don't think they're going to do that for a while, especially on their biggest night of the year that just got annihilated by the air getting sucked out of the room.
So, yeah. All right. As always, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search WOW Show. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.